You're listening to All This Talk with Angus Ryok. Thank you for downloading this podcast. With all this election talk, Australia is right now a very loud country. It's furious with the sound of TV pundits, radio static, hungover moans, and most importantly, keys tapping. Our air, radio, and brainwaves are full of placid infinitives by nicely dressed media clones, incomprehensible vulgarities by the unhappy slightly less than 50%, and the promises of the new government which we all plainly understand to be false. Welcome, Australia. This is the day we've been waiting for. For we have been waiting for it. We've been dreading it or looking forward to it, trying to mitigate it, upsetting it, agitating it, but overwhelmingly anticipating it. So well done, Australia. You predicted the future. Tony Abbott is now Prime Minister. Well, technically Prime Minister-elect. It's not too hard to predict the future, actually. Well, anybody of intelligence knows that the real world consists of forces too difficult to map and explain until after the fact, and really even then, there are some things we are very good at anticipating. Namely, we're very good at whinging and moaning about our inevitable misfortune, and then claiming how right we are when it comes, all the while bemoaning it due to some dumb bogans voting a way that you don't like. So yes, an Abbott government we predicted, and an Abbott government we now have. Many of us are unhappy about this, and chances are the Australian people at large, including many who voted for the Liberals, aren't going to be too thrilled soon enough. Now that's been said, can we talk about something else now? This narrative is so infuriating and self-perpetuating that I can't bear another second of thinking about it. Not only does it seriously presidentialize what is still technically a parliamentary system, but it implicitly relies on the notion that Labour is the answer because Tories are the only issue. A lot of us are angry. A lot of us are absolutely furious. And really, we have been for the last 6 years, because our so-called progressive government has not only drifted but ran to the right on some issues, and even on the supposed strengths of further entrenched neoliberal norms of discipline and marketisation. So yes, I give a Gonski, but who gave a businessman of all people carte blanche for education policy and funding in the first place? Ironically, Gonski's proposals were a lot more equitable than Labour's eventual policy, and do expect the Liberals to funnel federal money into private schools, as they have done time and time again. The point is that even with the purest intent, Labour's legislative achievements are simply indicative of what happens to social democratic policy in the long run. It's just the long run's getting shorter. Whatever happened to Indigenous issues, poverty, homelessness, or environmental policy? How come we still live in militarized apartheid for those in the north, with a very real Jim Crow for those in the east? How come the numbers of homeless people in Sydney only seem to be growing? Why has the casualization of labour only continued, and not halted at least? How has environmental policy come to be seen as antagonistic to, rather than wholly bound up with, the welfare and lifestyles of Australians everywhere? The issue is not Tony Abbott, and it's not even the Liberal Party. It's us. We expect these issues to improve the power only of our will, furiously expressed on Facebook and in the pub. We know voting alone changes little, yet we act as if it changes everything. We suffer the classical definition of insanity, doing the same thing expecting different results. Like you, I feel something a lot like this right now. But if that's the case, then we have to prove it. Simply being discontent doesn't do very much, and in reality, all it does is feed into the major parties' narratives more often than not. What political parties don't respond to is a bunch of upset, jaded, and snarky 20-somethings. What they do respond to is a well-organized political movement that causes them grief. Yes, they'll continually dismiss you, laugh at you, or insult you. What's new? What did you expect them to do? Roll over? We can't just wait for a social democratic saviour in the wings, unless we've learned absolutely nothing from Clinton, Blair, Rudd, and Obama. We can't blame them for manipulating us, because by doing so little, we've just been asking for it. We've let everybody be manipulated by them. The Senate results are still coming. We don't really know what the future is for the Australian Parliament, although we do know it's absolutely absurd. I'm personally very frustrated that Kate Fairman looks like she'll miss out in New South Wales, and that Simon Sheik won't get up in the ACT. I'm fucking furious that the Lib Dems, Family First, and goddamn motoring enthusiasts are getting a plum centre position. On the other hand, Hanson Young, annoying as she is, and Scott Sexyback Ludlam look like they're going to be returned. Victoria elected another Green senator, and Adam Bandt kept Melbourne. While electoral politics has its flaws, such results are still important. Government legislation affects real lives and real people, and it's very important to have politicians out there who are going to make us think about the right issues, even if ultimately it's only to put a human face on corporate tyranny. Unless you want violent and reactionary revolution, at which point, count me out. The left must work for reform, for gradual improvements, because these aren't reforms of capitalism, these are reforms for people. 80 years ago, economist Mikhail Kolesky argued that the political implications of full employment were far more dangerous than the economic implications of rising wage rates, because if people are doing well, they can get confident, they can demand more, and business has less power to react. In fact, George Carlin talks about this point more cogently than any political theorist I've come across.
Thank you.
While I'm less pessimistic than Carlin, he's right. They don't want smart, educated people sitting around discussing these issues rationally. And even when they don't do that, it's important to understand that these seemingly small quibbles between different parties can make large differences. Here is a rather famous clip by Chomsky discussing this, which I have edited down, but it is worth listening to the entire clip online if you haven't heard it before. He does occasionally say Bush when he means John Kerry, but these points should be very obvious.
Small differences in a very powerful system can have large outcomes. If the Spartacus League cared about working people, poor people, people elsewhere in the world who suffer and so on, they would care about the large outcomes that follow from those small differences. If you don't care about what happens to those people and you want to live in some abstract seminar somewhere, then you don't care. But it's a fact, and we can't deny it. Well, first of all, my own view, as you may or may not know, is that elections are a relatively insignificant aspect of what we ought to be doing. The propaganda system, including the media, tries to get you to focus, laser-like, on the fact that once every 4 years you have a chance to vote for two very similar candidates from the business party. That's not the important form of political activism. If we want to stop being a failed state and become a democratic society, things are going to have to happen in between the four-year period. And it's not showing up every 4 years and saying, vote for me. That's not what democracy is. It's all the things that happen to build up a democratic culture where you can run your own candidates. And you don't have to choose between, two men born to great wealth and political influence who went to the same elite university and joined the same secret society and are financed by the pretty much the same corporate sources that allow them to run, you'd get a democratic society. What are the differences? I think you know as well as I do. There are differences. The people around Bush happened to be at a very extreme end of a rather narrow spectrum. They are very dangerous internationally. They're not only the invasion of Iraq, but many other things. Domestically, there's a very substantial difference. If you look at tax programs, the social benefits programs and so on, the people around Bush are making a very dedicated effort to dismantle and destroy the entire array of progressive legislation and achievements that's been reached in the last century. Okay, now the Bush-Clinton people aren't all that much different, but they don't have this visceral hatred for democracy and social welfare that you find in the Bush programs. But they're not going to push through a tax program like Bush's. Well, those are small differences, but they do translate into big effects.
So, of course, elections aren't everything. That's precisely the point I have been making. But by the same token, they do very much matter. We should all be up in arms over the Senate. No senator should ever be elected with a primary vote below 1%. Or 2%. We can argue about details later, and to some extent the percentage point is arbitrary. But certainly an immediate course of action must be to agitate for and demand electoral reform, so we don't have motoring enthusiasts or family first in power again. I'm personally in favor of compulsory preferential voting above the line. So, like the House of Representatives, you have to list every party from one to whatever, while abandoning below the line completely. But I'll just as quickly take an optional preferential system too, so long as it comes to the 2% primary vote cutoff. People need to know who their vote goes to and be encouraged to think about it, because as George Carlin just pointed out, the last thing any power structure wants is for people to think about politics. That's why the largely English-speaking culture of being apolitical is so bloody destructive. This is what we need to change in the long run. It can be through various routes, legislative agendas, direct activism, and cultural dissent. In reality, it needs to be all of these. Any left movement which considers itself of the people needs to first and foremost bring the people into it. So at this current moment, this is our ultimate priority. We need journalists, we need musicians, we need activists, and we need not only fury, but dedication. This doesn't just mean writing shitty punk songs and yelling fucking Abbott. As much as I enjoy the British counterculture under Thatcher, in reality it wasn't effective enough. If Thatcher is the arch-enemy, then take heed of the fact that she proclaimed New Labour her greatest achievement. We need to change and preferably replace both parties, because both are part of the problem. Simply yelling fuck a lot does very little. So think about what you can do these coming months. For now, we have to lay the infrastructure for our movement to be built upon. If it wasn't clear before, it's devastatingly clear now. We can't rely on a Labour Party, and nor can we simply rely on just voting Green. Although, due to their democratic and activist roots, we can certainly count on working with and within them. For me, I'm going to attempt to actually get this podcast going. I hope it presents a voice of reason amongst the world's sea of insanity and inhumanity. I also hope that within the year I can develop a radio or podcast program much like the Young Turks in America. Sad as it is to say, thanks to them, I know much more about America's political system than my own. That needs to change. We all need to know more and do more. That means reading books, it means reading newspapers and journals and converting these thoughts into writing and audio and art. It's not going to be easy, and we need to work together. The fact is that politics is the art of the minority manipulating the majority. If we are to counteract this, then it means serious work. It means understanding that however hard it is, however dispirited or ridiculous we may feel when we attempt to change things, that we're doing a lot more than those who simply jibe at the sidelines. We may not win on every issue, and indeed we may not win on many at all, at least at first. But we are not powerless. We cannot pretend that the corporate and political elites are so effectively organized. In reality, they're just as disorganized and confused as we are. No opponent is omnipotent. So ruminate for a while. Listen to things that inspire you. Think long and hard about your own values and strengths. How can you help? How can you inform others? How can you help to organize? Who can you work with, and what teams can you create? And really, if you would like to get involved in any kind of media program, let me know. I would love to develop some kind of audio newspaper, with not just politics and current affairs, but music and art and goddamn anything. That's what I want to do, because that's what I at least think that I'm good at. But what about you? While we ponder our values, I'll have Pink Floyd, or really, Roger Waters, take us out as he explains his. This song is called The Gunner's Dream, and listen closely to the lyrics, particularly toward the end. Waters in this album sings about a requiem for the post-war dream, something he saw so clearly in the early 80s being torn apart. He thought that after all the suffering of the 20th century, that the least we could do was take care of each other, and not send troops needlessly to die, which in the Second World War did include Waters' own father. He asks us to take heed of the dream. And for this week, that's what I ask of you. What's your dream? What do you actually want? And then, how can we work together to achieve it? See you next week, Sydney.
Goodbye, Max. Goodbye, Ma. After the service, when you're walking slowly to the car, and the silver in her hair shines in the cold November air, you'd hear the tolling bell and touch the silk in your lapel. as the teardrops rise to meet the comfort of the band. You take her frail hand. What's more, no one ever disappears. You never hear the standard issue kicking in your door. You can relax on both sides of the tracks, and maniacs don't blow holes in bandsmen by remote control. And everyone has recourse to the law. No one kills the children anymore. No one kills the children anymore. Just write off his final scene. Take heed.